IndianCountryRadio@gmail.com. As always, we'll see you next week, Indian Country. The preceding program was produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. More audio can be found online at kboo.fm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
The 2024 election is coming, and we at KBOO want to make sure your voice is heard. Take KBOO's election agenda survey and help our volunteer reporters and programmers cover the 2024 election. We want to know, what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? Fill out our survey by August 14th, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa gift card. Full rules on our website. At the end of August, we'll report back with the community's priorities. Find that survey online at bit.ly/KBOOSurvey2024. That's bit.ly/KBOOSurvey24.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Kuyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Alex Belt. Alex is Inupiaq and Koyakon Athabascan. Alex works in recovery and is 4 years sober. And on this show, he courageously shares his story for those who are struggling. Alex would like the listeners to know that he has struggled with a variety of issues and hopes that if you get anything from this interview, it is that if a hard-headed guy like him can do it, you can too. So guys, please help me welcome Alex Belt. Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Are you able to go ahead and introduce yourself so our listeners out there can get to know you, please?
Yeah. My name is Alex Belt. I'm 38 years old. I am Koyakon Athabascan and Inupiaq. I was born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. And throughout the time up until now, I've ended up living out here in the Mattsu Valley, and I'm a person in long-term recovery.
Can you tell me what things looked like before you got sober?
I can. I mean, we'll have to start kind of like at the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
Lead you back. Okay, so like I said, I was born in Fairbanks. I had a pretty good childhood for the most part. I was raised by my mom and part of the time by my grandparents. My mom, she was a wonderful lady. She's no longer with us, but she struggled with alcoholism and drug abuse kind of like when I was a kid. So I spent a majority of the time with my grandparents and some of the time with her. So yeah, I grew up with my grandparents and then part of the time with my mom. Like I said, it was a very loving household. My aunts were living with my grandparents at the time too. So I was surrounded by a bunch of women as a young kid out in kind of the sticks of Fairbanks near Esther. And, you know, I kind of felt different all the time when I was a little kid. I was definitely very gawky and looked like a dweeb. So I remember getting made fun of quite a bit at school. But if we're going back to like how I got started, like what it was like for me, when I was with my mom, there was periods of time when I would watch her be a victim to domestic violence and watching her drinking with her boyfriends. And I was exposed to quite a bit growing up, you know what I mean? And I remember thinking like I never wanted to kind of end up like that. But I just yearned to be like all the rest of the kids and have like a mom and dad that I always felt different. And I don't know, I started feeling apart from other people at a pretty early age because I had these things going on at home like that and comparing myself to other kids. So when I came around like 11 years old and there was a neighborhood kid smoking some weed, I gladly accepted and I just felt so cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just started doing the wrong thing. It kind of just started progressing really quickly after that. My grandparents had divorced when I was about 12 years old. They were together for about 25 years. And it was a pretty crazy time. And it was very tumultuous. I ended up staying with my grandma, moving to Anchorage with her and starting school in a different city. And shortly after I finished eighth grade, she found out she had pancreatic cancer. You know, it was just a really hard time for me. I ended up finding weed and smoking weed with some of the other kids when I was in eighth grade. And I was under the care of my aunt at that time. She was my legal guardian. And within a year, my grandma had passed away. And I remember that was like my last lifeline to the world. Like I grew up with my grandparents and I had already lost my grandpa, who was like the only man in my life. You know what I mean? During that divorce. And then my grandma, who was my best friend, I felt pretty lonely and broken. From that, like after she passed away, I was just entering into high school. I started hanging out with the other lonely kids, you know what I mean? Like just people just like me and with problems with not feeling like they were accepted and fitting in. And we started drinking. It was just really like a roller coaster. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Within that first year, freshman year of high school, I had already started drinking like every single weekend and going to raves. And during raves, I would just black out every single time I drank. I just loved alcohol. and then started experimenting with some other drugs. And sneaking out, I had my aunt, Teresa, completely horrified and worried because she didn't know what to do with me. And, you know, nothing that all the consequences that started kind of rolling in, nothing stopped me from wanting to pick up a drink. It just like was fuel to the fire. You know what I mean? I passed out in the girls' bathroom at Diamond High School. Somebody reported me, thought that I was dead. But I'd really just went to a party the night before, and we thought it would be a cool idea to go to high school or go to school while we're blacked out drunk, and I just passed out. And I remember I was in the principal's office, and my aunt had to come get me, and she just looked so disgusted. And I just thought it was so cool, and I had little snowboarding goggles on my head. And she was mortified, and I got suspended for a week. And, you know, I went right back to drinking as soon as I got that just gave me time out to not have to do any schoolwork or anything like that. And I just kept partying. I went back in a week later. And at that point, like I said, since I was going to so many raves, I'd already started experimenting with other drugs. I just decided school wasn't for me. And I dropped out. I was told if I got a job and got my GED, that my aunt would be okay with that. So that's exactly what I did. I got a GED within 2 weeks. And started working at the Fireweed Theater, I think, when I was 16. And all that money just started going back into drinking and drugs. So what it was like for me, right? Like, I don't know how to do anything responsibly to this day. You know what I mean? I'm an addict and alcoholic through and through. When I was drinking and partying and, like, all these things during high school, I had a lot of opportunities to, like, kind of wake up and think that this isn't probably the smartest thing to do. Like, I was 15, and I remember blacking out, or I blacked out and woke up to getting raped, you know what I mean? And told my friends and really freaked out about it. And the only thing that kind of got me through that was just picking up the bottle again. It wasn't like, you know, I'm like, maybe this is a problem thing that you should probably stop drinking if things like this are happening. It was just really poor me, and I'm going to keep drinking about it. And I was very depressed and just kept going with that. I mean, I kind of hate talking about this part of my story because it's just so, it's kind of pathetic, you know what I mean? Because I just kept going in a whirlwind of destruction. I moved around a lot of different places, and I kept getting in more and more trouble and a lot more crazy situations. Like, you know, I've been raped a few times while drinking and partying. Again, like I said, I played the victim card with a lot of that and used that as fuel for my fire and told everybody else that had a problem with me partying like the way I did that it was because of them. Eventually, throughout all these escapades, when I was about 25, I ended up in Fairbanks and I was shoplifting to pay for a crack habit. Unfortunately, like, took a bleach bottle and sprayed somebody in the face with bleach in an attempt to, like, get away from, it was a store employee, and I maced that man with bleach and got arrested and spent about 4 months in jail. And I remember being scared to death because I had never been to jail before that. And, you know, the entire time I was in there, all I could do, like, I just couldn't wait to get back out and start drinking again. That's exactly what I did. I made it back out for like 2 weeks and caught another charge. I didn't report to probation. I had a felony under my belt for assault, and I got a pretty good deal. I mean, I only did 4 months in jail, and they gave me 24 months with 18 suspended. So I ended up doing 4 and 6, right? And then the first day I got out, I went back to drinking and smoking crack again, and took my friend's car and was driving around Fairbanks at 2 a.m. with no headlights on, and took the cops on a chase and got a felony eluding charge. I obviously got caught. And then, you know, I spent 3 years in jail. And the sick part with me is that I couldn't put together clean time in jail. I kind of really adapted to the environment in there, and it wasn't even a punishment at that point. I don't know how many people you've talked to that have talked about their incarcerations, but I've been through quite a few different facilities, and I could always find something, whether it was Pruno, Suboxone, heroin and meth. I went down to Colorado, and there was quite a few different options to keep using. And, you know, I took advantage of that for every opportunity I could. And I did 3 years straight and got out and overdosed the first day I was out back on probation. And I mean, honestly, it's just a lot of that continuing up until about 4 years ago. Going to jail, getting released, absconding from probation, getting chances to go to a halfway house or to different treatment centers, and, you know, not taking advantage of those situations and just getting high one in every single one, right? Until 2019, where I got picked up for a probation violation for partying in somebody's hallway, and somebody called us in. I spent 9 months in jail, and the only place that they would let me get out to was a place called Nugent's Ranch. It's Alaska Addictions Rehabilitation Services now, but the ranch. And I didn't have any intentions of staying clean when I got there. At that point, I was pretty much just using to try and kill myself, in all reality. And I wasn't sure that, because they go off the 12 steps there. And you get a sponsor and you're doing meetings every day. And I wasn't sure that those words and God could ever keep me sober. But I don't know. I spent 10 months there, and I don't know when the shift happened, but it did. And I think I kind of just started seeing that I could kind of continue life sober as I went through there. And I graduated. You know, I ended up following up with outpatient treatment at a place called True North and meeting more people in the community out here. Got opportunities to kind of like, I don't know, my story is kind of all over the place right now, but that's kind of what it was like. It's just a lot of jail, in and out of jail, in and out of jail, and putting myself through situations to where like I almost died. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Man, I was listening to you and holy cow, you have a story. And, you know, I have some similarities, and I could relate to some of the stuff that you said. Like, you know, I went to college and summer fine arts camp in Fairbanks, and I remember sneaking out and going to the raves there in, you know, the warehouses, wherever they would set up there, and then being so scared when there would be like somebody pulling out a gun and shooting in, you know. That's a memory I have of raves. And when you said raves, I was like, whoa, yeah, that brings me back. And the constant like blacking out, that was me too. Not knowing, waking up, not knowing what the heck happened, and just being ashamed of what my friends were going to tell me what I did and stuff like that. And being stuck in that, you know, poor me state, like you said. Oh, you can get stuck in that. No kidding. For a while. And it's so hard to pull yourself out of that shame, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I tried to zoom through so much of my story in just a few minutes, and I really lost kind of the thing. But because I was trying to kind of keep on track with like what it was like. But yeah. I mean, I can definitely answer some more. I went through too much history right then and there, and kind of left out some of the good juicy pieces of it. But it was awful. Like, I, you know, I was a threat and menace to society, and all of these things kept happening to me. And kind of just like what you said, I took a victim stance to the world. You know what I mean? Like, because my mom grew up an alcoholic, and I had to experience that, you know, it was everybody else's problem but mine. And I guilted people. I manipulated people, and, you know, took advantage of that and just acted like a complete victim to the entire world, and created a lot of victims in my path.
Man, you could write a book. You should write a book.
Oh, embarrassing.
Oh, my gosh. You should write a book. That would be like a bestseller, man. I swear. It's so captivating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I could. I'm very thankful that I've been arrested all those different times. And I remember I was just in Fairbanks, like I had the opportunity to like, so like I said, I harmed so many people along the way, right? Like I fortunately have a relationship with with most of my family members, but it's come little by slowly. I've had to kind of show some commitment and earn their trust again. But I had the opportunity to go up to Fairbanks last year and watch my sister get promoted to a lieutenant in the fire department.
Wow.
While I was there celebrating with her and out at a restaurant, I actually ran into one of the correctional officers that, because I'm still on bail currently. My charge was in 2019, and that was for promotion to contraband because I had Suboxone on my person, and it's still going through the legal process. But I'd ran into the correctional officer, and like I got it was like such a crazy opportunity because I had the chance to kind of like smile, and he saw kind of like me healthy now, right? And I got to tell him thank you, because in all honesty, they kind of saved my life. Like, all of these people were kind of just like angels, even though they're correctional officers. Mm. You know, I wouldn't be here today if that hadn't happened. I would most likely either be doing exactly what I was doing, or worse off, I'd be dead. So,
That's a good question, too. Would you change anything in your life?
Here's the thing about that, right? Like, I have a lot to make up for. I have a lot of amends to make, and I've caused so much harm. Like, I'm not proud or happy of all of these harmful things that I've not only done to some of my family members, loved ones, and friends, because those were my closest victims, you know what I mean? But then, like, the community as a whole, you know, I obviously wouldn't want to mace somebody in the face with bleach. You know what I mean? Shoplifting meat to trade for half price for drugs so I can continue buying crack. But at the same time, like, some of those things, if it's in a way that I can help people relate to me, or just, you know, provide some hope, support, or encouragement, or just even be able to listen for somebody, I wouldn't change it. But like, some of those things, like, I mean, I obviously wouldn't want to mace somebody in the face with bleach. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But, you know, going through that and, you know, making it through Nugent's Ranch, I heard that Nugent's Ranch is pretty, you know, one of the tougher treatment facilities. That's amazing. And you are working at in recovery services. And so, you know, it must be amazing for you to go through all of that and then make it through that and then watch other people, inspire other people, you know, starting off in where you were when you went in there and then making it through the whole program and, you know, watching them grow and then, you know, graduating and reuniting with families and stuff like that. That must feel so good.
It's the stuff that dreams are made of, right? Like, I don't consider my work, right? Because that's where I work, a place that's better than any other treatment centers or anything like that. I do appreciate that it was like, it's, I think what it is it's long-term. You know what I mean? Like, I hadn't ever tried to adult since I was a child. Like, I was a failure to launch, right? Like, I had to learn how to do everything sober and how to be, like, and I'm still learning. Don't get me wrong with that. Like, I had to learn how to, you know, mature. And throughout that process, because I spent about 10 months there, I had the opportunity to kind of do that. Like, I worked with a sponsor, and like, my counselor at that place is just like an angel, because she had been through so many of the things. She's in recovery herself. You know, and I had a lot of people holding my hands, kind of. I did it kicking and screaming that entire stay. And I just had to stumble through life, learning the hard way in recovery, right? And just kind of give myself a shot and see that I kind of could do it. And, you know, like I said, I followed up with outpatient services at a place called True North. And that place was just as special. Like, I met my entire friends group when I was going to classes out there for outpatient services. And those people are like my best friends to this day. You know what I mean? But being able to work there at the ranch, yeah, that's what you're talking about. These miracles and watching people kind of like, you know, the lights come on and just little by little, it's such a privilege. I'm blessed for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Man, you ever have people reaching out to you, you know, that have graduated and stuff like that? Like, or are you like super busy with that whole thing?
Oh, you mean like people that I had graduated with or just what do you mean?
Yeah, that have been through the program and you know, you keep in touch with them and stuff like that.
Yeah, most of them are still my best friends to this day. Like the group of people that I went to the ranch with, most everybody I still talk to. One of my best friends is working at a different treatment center, and through him I met another good friend of mine. I was living with somebody I went to, like, I got my very first apartment ever in recovery with somebody I went through the ranch with, and I still keep in touch with a lot of them to this day. The thing in recovery fields, right, like, I'm sure, I'm not 100% certain where you work, but, like, a lot of people want that lived experience, so a lot of my current coworkers are former graduates as well.
Wow, yeah. The reason I ask is some of the people that, you know, I've been through treatment, a number of times, number of outpatient treatments. You know, I've made it through one residential treatment through the Ernie Turner Center, and then I tried residential treatment centers two times before, but I walked out of those. You know, And the reason I asked that was because some of the peers that I went with, you know, unfortunately didn't, you know, stick with being sober or in recovery, you know, and it's super hard to hear that, you know.
Yeah. There's quite a few people, everybody has their path, but, you know, like it's your life, right? Like I, unfortunately, one, somebody I was just in outpatient treatment with, like honestly, like my first gay best friend, because like throughout this entire, my entire life, like I've never trusted people. First of all, I couldn't even trust myself, but I kind of got to walk through and learn how to be friends with another gay man because it's very stereotypical, right? Very catty. But somebody I was in outpatient treatment with that was like a dear, dear friend to me. You know, somebody I didn't really expect to kind of fall out. He just unfortunately passed away like a couple weeks ago or on Easter. You know, if people that I graduated with or anything like that, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like our life kind of depends on this, and I'm going to love people where they're at and do what I can to best support them.
Yeah, definitely. What were your biggest challenges when you were getting into recovery?
I was very institutionalized. So that was like a definite challenge for me. Like, I guess like in terms of like not wanting to get honest and like, you know, looking at people that are getting honest and having some morals and stuff like that, kind of like harassing them or thinking they're a narc or just whatever, you know, just that criminal mentality. And thinking that the police are going to get out to you, like, or out to get you when they're really your biggest friends. My biggest challenges has first and foremost always been me. You know, I lack confidence quite a bit of the time, and I don't trust God, I think. And I try and take my will over in my life, and that ruins a lot of things, but... You know, it's because it's all kind of a learning curve for me, but I've walked through some grief in recovery, and I'm still standing here. I'm still on bail, and I get the opportunity to go to reducing recidivism events, and I just had the opportunity to, I mean, that's not a barrier, even though I thought it would be, you know what I mean? But I have the opportunity to, like, I went to a crisis intervention training alongside law enforcement and Wasilla Police and first responders. And I kind of got to share my story and, you know, see how these people are just like, so the community is really just trying to support you. Another big challenge that I think that I still currently kind of deal with, I think, is just loneliness and codependency and things like that. In which I'm still kind of, that's like, those are the big issues that I don't like to talk about, and mental health, right? I've struggled with mental health since I was a kid, and really just ragging on myself and anxiety and all these different things. If we're talking about real challenges, I think that it's just like loneliness and your mental health and things like that.
What does your life look like now?
What does it look like now? Well, right now I have the day off. So right now I'm working as a counselor in training at the ranch, or Alaska Addiction Rehabilitation Services. Oh my God, the board of directors would get so mad if they heard me calling it the ranch. You know, so I, like I said, I went through treatment and did some outpatient and got really involved in the community out here and started going to a lot of self-help meetings and getting ensconced in the recovery community out here. And, you know, I started off as a ranch hand when I first started working there and moved my way to the receptionist because I wasn't too happy with shoveling pig poop. When I was the ranch hand, went through the receptionist, and from there I was promoted to the administrative assistant, and then went to intake coordinator, where I was able to get people into treatment, and then some case management, and now where I am today. But you know, I like to, because of my criminal background, like I said, I was part of that Wasilla crisis intervention team training and then joining some of the reentry things happening around the community, because I believe that we need a seat at that table when they're being discussed. And my good friend Kara Nelson has gotten me super involved in that community, and I love her for that because she's such an inspiration to me. And so I like to do those events. You can find me at meetings and, you know, just spending time with loved ones and family and friends. You know, I have kind of a really awesome life, and which is funny to talk about how, like, I'm sitting here whining about loneliness sometimes for myself. But like I said, I just try to keep that a reality check and see if how I can be of support to some people around me. You know what I mean? I'm not alone.
Yeah, awesome. All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right. You have a great day.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Beulah!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Kuyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Shannon Nelson. Shannon is originally from Fairbanks, Alaska. She is Gwich'in Athabaskan and Inupiaq. On today's show, Shannon courageously shares her story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Shannon Nelson. Hi Shannon, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. The way I found you was on Instagram, because I always find my people I interview on social media, because I figure if they're posting about sobriety and recovery, then they're a good candidate to come on and share their story. So I really appreciate you coming on to share your story.
Thank you.
Shannon, can you go ahead and introduce yourself and let people know who you are?
Yes, my name is Shannon Nelson. My maiden name is Shannon James. I am from Fairbanks, Alaska, and I currently reside in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay, and are you Indigenous?
Yes, my family, my mother is from Fort Yukon, and she's Gwich'in Athabascan, and my father is from Kotzebue. He's a Nupiaq.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Can you go ahead and kind of tell your story, let everybody know how things were before you decided to get sober, and why you got sober, and how you're living your life now?
Yes. So before coming into recovery, I was in a very dark place. I was that kind of addict that couldn't get clean one day. It started about when I was 12 years old, and then I used all the way until I was 42. I noticed when the change came was when my mother told me that my stepfather's an amazing man from Tanana. My mom told me that he was not my dad and that I had another dad. So from there, I started, you know, all this resentment started coming out and abandonment issues. I started hurting people because I was so hurt. I fought my mom. I talked horrible to my father, you know, and that's where my addiction started, you know, and it started with alcohol. And then it progressed throughout the years with everything else, all the drugs. I've lost homes. I've lost kids. I've lost jobs. And most of all, I've lost myself, you know. The hardest part about having to heal was having to deal with myself. And today I work at a 12-step program. And, you know, when I had the spiritual awakening, it was when I hurt my ex-husband and his significant other, and I was the type of addict that would always tell God, if you get me out of this one more time, I'll stop. But something was different about this last time. I truly made a pact with God, and I was for real that time. And this was in 2015, and I said, if you get me out of this, because I remember putting up the paraphernalia and then something told me to put it up. And then the cops were there like at midnight to remand me. You know, having to take accountability, and I don't even know if you want to say accountability, because I made the pact with God. I told him, if you just get me out of this one last time, I will get it together. And he came through for me once again, always came through for me. Every time I put myself, you know, got myself into trouble. And I ended up pleading out to a lesser charge and not the charges that were given to me. So that's when my healing started, you know. And I left Fairbanks after that, because I was like, if I stay here, I'm going to continue doing the same things. And I just didn't see nothing for myself there anymore. I just, the people that I hung out with and, you know, my family, I just felt like I would never grow into the person that I was meant to be there. So I made the decision in 2016 to leave. And that's when the spiritual awakening truly happened, because I was scared. I was fearful. I didn't know where I was going to go. On my way to Anchorage, you know, I was crying. And God kept sending me signs, you know. I remember just feeling a sense of peace, like, don't turn back. Keep going. So I kept going. And, you know, things didn't miraculously change when I left. It took a long time. You know, I put myself in treatment. I kept relapsing. And I noticed a pattern, like every 90 days I would use. And, you know, and this is like 30 years of addiction, you know, the bottom of bottoms. And I took it upon myself to go to Kotzebue because I knew that 90 days was coming up. I got clean November 7th or 11/7/18. And then I knew that it was coming up to where in January, I knew that it was coming up that I was going to relapse. So I made the decision to leave Anchorage and go to Kotzebue because that's where I got clean before in my past. I remember in 2012 when I fought to get my kids back. That's where I chose to go, and that was like healing for me. So I remember the tools. I've had the tools the whole time. I just didn't, you know, I didn't make use of them. So I went to Kotzebue, and when I went there, I had a job on before I even went there. I had an apartment before I even went there. So that to me was like my higher power, like still paving my way all the way. And when I went up there, I kept my paraphernalia for 11 months. I'll never forget, you know. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional. I'll never forget sitting up there and then healing and being taught everything that my elders taught me about sitting with myself, turning to my higher power, and just meditation. I used to close my eyes and I used to imagine myself in the core of the earth. And I used to just imagine everything around me. And learning to balance a job, kids, you know, I couldn't really do much. I didn't have much energy. I used to check the mail. You know, I used to go to the sauna to meditate. And so I did that for 11 months. And that's when I decided to move back to Anchorage. And I knew I was ready. So I threw away my paraphernalia after 11 months. And I made the decision to come back. And once again, you know, my higher power led my path. I had an apartment when I got back to Anchorage. I had a job already set up, you know. And this is, I give all the glory to my higher power because growing up, I was always told that I wouldn't amount to nothing. I would never have an office job because I have a lot of tattoos. I was told that I'd always be a dope fiend and a drug dealer. I actually turned all of that into motivation, and I was motivated to be something better than I was in the past. So I put myself in a medical office assistant school. And then from there, I went to drug and alcohol abuse school, and I landed a job at ANMC. That's where I knew I needed to get sober, because when I got a job at ANMC, I seen my people hurting, and I seen my people dying, and it didn't sit well with me This was before I went to Kotzebue. That's what made my decision, actually. And so I knew that if I was going to continue to work in the medical field, I had to change my life, because I couldn't comfort my people knowing that I was hung over and still up from the same night. So moving fast forward, I went to Kotzebue and then I came back to Anchorage. Now I work in the field, and the hardest part about this whole journey is just learning to live with myself. Today I'm big on self-care. I'm big on prayer, you know. I work a 12-step program. I have a sponsor. I do service work. I go to meetings. Everything that they ask you to do, I'm doing steps. I'm finishing up on my 10th step right now. So, but what I always tell the newcomers is life doesn't get better. It does get better, but you're still going to have obstacles. Before my 5 years, I almost went back out, and I had a really rough time because, you know, right now I'm in college. I'm actually working on my bachelor's in human services. And it's a lot. And plus, I take 4 kids to school every morning and pick up 4 kids in the afternoon. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have a job to let me take my lunch at 3. You know, so having to balance school, work, kids, a 12-step program, it sounded easier just to run back out. But luckily, my eldest daughter was with me, and I just looked at her and I said, I'm not okay, and I want to run out that door right now. And she stayed with me all night, you know, and I had to rebuild my whole recovery network. Like, I got a new sponsor. I redid my steps. I changed my home groups. Like, I just, like, went from ground zero and rebuilt up, because that's how much my recovery means to me today. I chase my recovery like I chase my dope. And I'm very, very thankful that I get that life today, and I get to be in my kids' life, my grandkids' life. You know, I get to do all the things. I get to be present for people that are looking for recovery. So that is a big part of my story.
Yeah, wow. Listening to your story, such a powerful one. I have some, I can relate to some of the things that you said, like when you kept relapsing over and over. That's me too, you know. I kept relapsing and relapsing. And it wasn't until, like you said, it wasn't until I, you know, surrendered and actually worked on myself. Because, you know, I've been to treatments and whatnot, but it was either from the nudge from the judge, or it was to satisfy somebody else, you know, saying, them saying, you need to go to treatment, you know. And I'm like, oh, and I'm coming back from a bender, and I say, okay, I will, you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't doing it for myself until, you know, that last time. And, you know, I struggle with that too. I put it out there that I relapsed last year. And when you said you started over again, you didn't relapse, but I did. You started over again. I went to, you know, treatment again, outpatient treatment, because I just let everything that I learned go. I mean, one by one, it seemed like I put all my faith in doing this podcast and saying, oh yeah, I'm doing this, so it's gonna going to keep me, you know, going the right path. But I didn't, I wasn't doing, you know, the exercise, the meditation and stuff that I learned, the coping mechanisms I did one by one. I started, you know, not doing those things, the things I used to do when I got out of treatment this last time, you know. And after I got out of treatment the last time, I was almost 4 years clean, you know, and that's the longest I've ever had in my whole life, because before then, it was just a revolving door of relapse, you know, and then wanting to get clean and then relapse. So I want that life when I was, you know, working through everything, doing the things that I learned, you know, being in a good place, you know, I want that again. So I went back to, you know, outpatient. So that's another one that I related to you with.
It's really big that you admitted that, you know, you fell off. And I think that's big. A lot of people, they have so much guilt and shame to where they don't want to come back. And it's amazing that you came back. And, you know, you said, I messed up and I want to try it again, because a lot of people don't come back. There's a lot of people dying out there right now. And my ultimate goal is to help people that are struggling with addiction. And today I'm a case manager and I just absolutely love my job and interacting with people that are looking for recovery.
Yeah, on your Instagram, you wear your sobriety recovery like a badge of honor, you know, in the open.
Uh-huh. And a lot of people feel comfortable in reaching out to me, and that's the way I want to be. I just want to be remembered as loving, caring, understanding, non-judgmental, you know. I want people to know that I'm always here if you need to talk. And I'm a vault. You could tell me whatever and it'll just go in this vault, and you know, don't have to have any fear of talking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you put yourself out there like that, you do open up the doors, and I applaud you for, you know, doing that in such open, because some people, they're sober, but they don't, you know, put it out there as much. Not saying it's, you have to put it out there. You know, people, everybody's different. Everybody's sobriety journey, recovery different. Recovery journey is different, you know. And what you're doing, you know, telling your story and living your recovery out in the open, you're showing people that, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be ashamed. You know, pull yourself up. And when you're ready... Yeah. Just reach out, you know?
Yeah. In January, I got tribal tattoos, you know? And I was like, because I have tattoos on my neck that I was getting rid of. I was lasering them off because I was like, oh, man. I'm like, I'm going places, you know, in my career. And I can't have these tattoos on my neck because there's such a stigmatism with neck tattoos. So. Yeah. And then January, like I got my 5 years in November. So January, I decided to get facial tattoos. And I'm like, man, on my face, how am I getting rid of these ones on my necks and putting them on my face? But I prayed about it, right? And all the signs were there for my higher power. Like there was a moose walking towards me downtown and an eagle flew over me like a little while later. And then when I was driving to go to the appointment, the lady that was going to do my tattoos, there's a road with her name on there. And I'm like, okay. So my tattoos represent all the accomplishments that I've made in my recovery. And, you know, my 5 years recovery was really big for me.
Wow. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And having culture representing, you know, your culture like that, and tattoos are a way of healing too. You know, some people, you know, get like I have memorial tattoos of my mom and my dad. You know, and like you, you have those tattoos that you tie in with your 5 years. You know, and your culture. So tattooing, it's a way of healing as well. You know, when you when you decided to get sober, how difficult was it, and what were your steps?
So the difficult part was just living with myself. I've never lived with myself my whole life. I always had to have a man around, or you know, friends around to help me, my family to help me. So a big part of me leaving Fairbanks and leaving that behind, I left it all behind. And coming to Anchorage and going to Kotzebue, I just learned to live with myself. That was the most hardest thing for me. Today, it's easier, you know. I'm a very independent woman, and I take my recovery really personal. You know, I'm very, I guess you could say, I don't want to say greedy, but I take it pretty personal to where I have boundaries and I don't let certain people around, because I used to want to help everybody, and I put myself in some pretty risky places helping people and letting them in my home. So I had to start making boundaries and cutting that off, but there's a lot of challenges still. I mean, I am on step 10, you know, and that's helped me a lot, because I didn't want to look at Shannon my whole life. I didn't want to look at all the wreckage that I've did and all the people that I've hurt, and I've caused trauma on a lot of people. Today I get to make amends and apologize and show them what I'm doing different today. I don't have to hurt anybody today. I get to just spread nothing but love.
You mentioned that you had to get your kids back.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know a lot of people listening, you know, go through that. And a lot of people, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about that.
I am.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I got my kids taken away in 2009, and it was because I went to sleep because I was up for so many days, and my kids walked out on the street. And when I woke up, OCS and the police were there, and you know, I had to take accountability that my kids could have got killed on the road. At first, I was in denial. Like, I didn't want to admit to any of that stuff. But after a while, like, it took me 4 treatment centers to even get my kids back. Like, the first couple ones, I wasn't serious. In one of the treatment centers, I was still using drugs. It was horrible. Like, and then once I got my Devonin, I left. So I did 2 short terms and 2 long terms. The 4th treatment center was in Kotzebue, the one that I mentioned in the beginning, and that was McCiviac Wellness Camp. And that was 12 miles out of Selawik Village. And boy, that was some healing. Like, I haven't been the same since that. Like, today I keep my kids safe. You know, now I work in social services, mm-hmm. you know, in human services. Like, who would ever think, like, people think, like, me growing up, you know, I caught a felony at 18, and that was a failure to render assistance. I hit a cab when I was drinking and driving. So I thought I could never get a career. I thought I was always going to be a felon for the rest of my life and amount to nothing. And today, you know, I guess that felony, it got dropped to a misdemeanor, because it says on my court view converted into a misdemeanor. So I was very fortunate about that, because I was on felony probation for 11 and a half months because I could not get clean at all. From 18, I think, to 29. Yeah, that was a long stretch. And even though I had the courts there, I just could not get clean. And when I got my kids, that didn't even straighten me up. Like, I ended up relapsing after I got my kids back. But there was a difference in me. Like, I kept striving to do better. Like, even though I relapsed, I'm like, I remembered where I came from, back to the lands, back to my culture, back to what the elders taught me. And today, you know, every day I just wake up and today I'm sober. Mm. Till the time I hit my pillow, I'm going to remain sober. And then I do it all over again.
Shannon, I want to thank you so, so much for agreeing to come on here. Hoyana.
Hoyana Deku, I really appreciate you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Beulah!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
KBOO Portland.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month